How are you feeling after that Azerbaijan Grand Prix, Raiguy? I feel like we have a lot of questions were answered, and then some new sort of questions or curiosities were brought up after seeing the Ferrari power plant go up in flames.
I would say I'm very worried for Ferrari and all of their customer teams.
Yeah, it's very interesting what's happening right now with Ferrari. We thought it was looking like a runaway season at the start of this campaign for Ferrari, and now they can't even run.
Yeah, it's a runaway season.
Fucking Raikkonen! What a fucking idiot!
Come on, get that McLaren out of here. This guy is a fucking joke.
With 5 laps remaining, so we need to keep this pace up.
Hey man, don't talk to me through the corners.
This is Purple Sector. I'm Lynn Raiguy on the mics.
We are here. We are ready to chat Baku. Some pretty crazy shit went down. It's a different championship now.
Baku, as we said in the Grand Preview, now we're hitting our Baku Grand Recap. It's so much more fun calling it Baku, by the way, than
No one says Azerbaijan.
I know, but the hashtag is Azerbaijan GP.
And, I know, but
you know,
it's Baku.
Yeah, exactly. But it is, I think it's just a fun race. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's so fast. It's crazy bumpy, as we saw.
Oh yeah,
it's got so many tight turns, and you know, the runoff, and these guys are pushing it and then pounding walls and then diving in the runoff for the quick snap turns. You know, it's got so much action.
Yeah, it's got a lot of character. I mean, the only year that people were disappointed about this race was the very first one, because Rosberg just cakewalked it. But other than that, every year it's been phenomenal. Even this year, I know the Ferrari fans probably don't agree. Maybe the Mercedes fans as well, because of Lewis's back. But, I mean, it's good racing. We saw some awesome battling, some good overtakes, spicy stuff.
Baku is fun. First, here's our promo, then we'll get into the Baku Grand Recap. Thanks for tuning in to Purple Sector. Remember to reach out to the show by pitting in the mail, box, box, box.
Instructions to box.
You can leave a voicemail or shoot a text to 904-8-PURPLE. That's 904-878-7753. You can also slide into our DMs at Purple Sector Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to follow both those accounts as well.
Follow me on Instagram.
You can also get additional content on our YouTube by subscribing to Purple Sector F1 Podcast. Finally, be sure to subscribe to Purple Sector wherever you get your podcasts. Review the show and throw us 5 stars at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. See y'all on the track. So we were talking about Hamilton's back, Ryan. This was a busy race weekend for Hamilton. He was all over it. So you started off with both the Mercedes cars and their helmets. They now have that like iridescent pride Mercedes star.
Yes.
That actually looks amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's like a hologram or something.
Yeah, they have it on the front of their helmets.
Holographic,
they have it on the nose.
Holographic.
Yeah, they have it on the nose, hologramic, on the nose of the cars, and I thought that looked great. Lewis Hamilton was also awarded Brazilian citizenship.
Yeah.
So that Brazilian Grand Prix is going to be a show now that he's a hometown hero.
Yeah, that'll definitely make customs easier. By the way, if you were to get honorary citizenship from any country, Brazil's got to be up there on the list for best countries to get it in.
Yeah, that's definitely a good gig.
Right? I mean, it's got to be like top five.
Some great beaches, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, put it up there.
So he also rhymed one driver of the day. That's back-to-back driver of the day wins for Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. I think Gasly deserved it.
Yeah, but I think it was maybe people were feeling bad about Hamilton's back because during the race, you know, he's getting on the
radio
saying,
There was some, did you like the sympathy voting.
Did you like the transcription for that?
Arg.
They put in the arg.
Arg.
My back is killing me.
Yeah. I feel for him because you could see his head just, I mean, it was just violently bouncing down that straight every time. Ridiculous.
Yeah. Obviously, Mercedes has had the worst porpoising all season, and this was a combination.
Let's just talk about
porpoising and the bumpy. I mean, this is a street, right?
Street circuit,
a street in the capital city of Azerbaijan. This is where cars are constantly running. So you're not going to have a nice, smooth track there.
Yeah, the straight is very bumpy. So this is at the forefront of the conversation strictly because of that, in my opinion. Like, if that straight wasn't that bumpy, we probably aren't talking so much about the bottoming out.
Yeah, and now Toto is trying to angle.
Oh, Toto is...
for, like, minimum ride heights and things like... the other teams aren't struggling as much, but this is always how they do it, the soap off the track and lobbying for each of their teams, Horner and him and any other team principal, right? Where if something's affecting only you, you try and bitch and moan to the powers that be and say, fix this, or have everyone else suffer from the same thing, or help us fix this, you know?
Yeah, well, to me, Moot, there's no subtlety at all to what Toto's doing right now. He's politicizing this. He's gaming the situation hard. If you pay attention to what he's saying, okay, if it's really about driver safety, every interview he did after the race, he said, something needs to be done about the regulations. Which is, there's so many other things you could do for driver safety before changing the regulations. That's the real agenda there. He just wants to change the regs.
Yeah, so to summarize, what is it exactly he's trying?
He wants the suspension regs changed.
Uh-huh.
Which, because their shit's not working.
Yeah, basically, they have too stiff of a design or something, right? Or not stiff enough.
Yes.
And so he wants everyone else to be stiffened up so they all have more of the same troubles? Well, that's what I'm trying to understand.
The suspensions have been simplified with the new regs, and he wants to...
Wants to be able to have more intricate and...
Yes, because Mercedes, they had some amazing suspensions previously. So, here's the thing. I'm all for driver safety, and I agree. Something should probably be done to make this less painful for guys like Lewis... or any of the teams that are bouncing around like crazy. You know, no one wants to see, like, Lewis miss a race because he has a herniated disc or something. That would be terrible. But it's not, like, this is what Toto is doing. The race is over. Like, Lewis is slow to get out of the car. And Toto's like, look at what the FIA's done to us. Like, that's not what's going on.
Right. The FIA made you, what did they build your suspension?
Yeah, yeah. You're running the cars low at the cost of your driver's comfort. Both of your drivers.
Right. That is funny, though. Look at what they've done to my boy.
Yeah, look. I can't believe what the FIA's doing to Lewis. That's not what's happening here. I'm sorry.
It is crazy that... because when you actually think about it, you know, if you're just tuning in for quality and... excuse me, you know, like a little bit of the race or something, you don't realize... when you think about the whole of this weekend, three practice sessions... qualifying the race,
it's
for
so
51
much,
laps
it's
that
so
was
bouncing.
Nonstop, just getting pounded.
Yes,
them both Mercedes drivers getting pounded.
They were just jackhammers.
Yeah,
jackhammers all weekend.
Yeah, it hurt to watch, didn't it, when you would see that overhead shot looking down on their heads bouncing like groundhogs.
Here's my impression of Bono over the weekend, Moot. Had Dan Lewis, it's jackhammer time.
Yeah, it was jackhammer time for sure. Yeah, I heard even other guys, like Danny Ricciardo was talking about, that it felt like his head was getting dribbled like a basketball on those bumpy straights.
But then you have his teammate Lando saying he's not going to complain.
The thing is, Ryan, porpoising has become too much of an all-encompassing word now for when cars aren't perfectly smooth on track. Like, porpoising is a very specific thing, not just bumps or bump, you know, when guys are bouncing around in turns, in corners, on straights that aren't smooth as eggs, you know, but everything now is porpoise. How are you? That porpoising is, you know,
this weekend was a mixture.
It's not all porpoising.
This
right?
weekend was a mixture of simply, it's a mixture of porpoising this weekend and simply bottoming out. The cars are being run so low that they're just hitting the ground where the track is bumpy.
Right, and this is also a unique, massive straight.
Yes,
you know.
Oh, it'll be an issue in Canada this coming weekend as well.
It's going to be an issue everywhere for Mercedes until the FIA stops, you know, forcing them to run these suspensions.
I can't believe what the FIA is doing to Lewis's back.
So we loved, I think it's unanimous, Ryan, we loved the hologramic Mercedes Pride Stars. What did you think of that Alfa Romeo livery for Azerbaijan? I'm curious of what the timing was. They basically went Italian flag, right?
Yeah. So I saw some people saying that it's for, I forget the name in Italian, but it's like Republic Day or whatever.
It's like a celebratory,
it's like their national holiday.
Yeah,
I think. But that was on June 2nd. So I don't understand why they, it's very strange that they did it. I like it though. I think it looks sick.
We always like them trying new stuff out, and especially because their car doesn't have nothing but carbon fiber because they're peeling off all the wrap and paint and everything like the other teams are.
Yeah, but I mean, I was a fan of it. I hope it stays. Was that a one-off? Did we get any clarity on that?
I imagine it's a one-off. If they're doing it, you know, 2 weeks after this celebratory day and they just wanted to crowbar it into the race in Baku, I don't know that they'll keep running it.
I hope they keep it.
Who knows? I mean, any other random holiday, they might find an excuse to bring it back out.
Yeah.
You ready to Niem over to qualifying? Did you have anything in practice? I mean, there were some,
I've got some
good action. Yeah. Go through the practice notes you have.
So one thing has become abundantly clear. We've complained about Paul DiResta plenty on this show. His voice irritates us. He never has anything funny to say. He's mostly negative in his commentary.
Yeah, he tends to be very like negative and just, it's like too deep of an analysis with sort of a negative bend to it.
So, I mean, it's abundantly clear now. We got so many messages over the weekend from listeners saying how much they hate Paul DiResta's commentary because Bruno wasn't in Baku this weekend. So PDR got a lot of airtime. I mean, a lot. Too much. So I just got a kick out of how many messages we got. We are not alone. Our whole audience can't stand Paul DiResta.
Yeah, and listening to how much he says retardation. That's his buzzword. Yeah.
Retardation all the time. We need to clip it for the show.
Oh, there'll be plenty of opportunities when he's on the mic to clip
retardation.
That. Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. A lot of it's someone else might ask a question or make a point. He always kind of is like, no. That's not it. Or, you know, it's always sort of he's poo-pooing everything and critical of almost all the cars. Everything just seems critical of the decision to do anything or a performance by any of the drivers, you know.
Yeah, he's a negative Nancy. No one likes that.
He just needs to bring the energy and the funny. And the thing is, if he's by himself, he's going to somehow suck up almost as much air as Crofty. And it's not going to be much shtick going back and forth.
Yeah, if it's possible to suck up as much air as Crofty. Moot, in FP1, I don't know if you saw that rear-facing shot of Max Verstappen's wing when his DRS was open, but it literally looked like a sheet of loose-leaf paper. I mean, it was
flapping.
It was so flexible, it was insane. I was actually shocked that wasn't the talk of the paddock. So I wonder if the FIA scrutineers immediately went to them and were like, hey, you need to tighten up that fucking wing.
Well, it's interesting because then the sister team, AlphaTauri, in the race, you have Yuki Tsunoda's DRS wing that like basically breaks on one side a third of the way down, and the other side is still working. And
it's pretty crazy.
When they pit stop, he got the black and orange flag, right? Is that the one like
the rare,
stop for mechanical fixing or
yeah, you
something?
Have to come to the pits for repairs. Too
right.
dangerous.
And they
drive.
Get out there with the duct tape.
Yeah, it was like straight up NASCAR in Baku.
It was great.
I loved it.
And again, going back to PDR, he's like, they need to, that's not going to fly. Oh, the FIA's not going to like that. Retire that car.
Well, to be fair, I was thinking there's no way they let Yuki finish the race. But then after the patch job they did, I didn't think they were going to let him finish.
Yuki's funny, man. You heard him on the radio, like when he's stopped there forever because they, I don't think, had conveyed to him what was going on with his wing.
Right.
So he's sitting there forever, and then when they finally let him go after they duct tape his rear wing all up, he's like, what the hell? You know, they're like, no more DRS this race. I think they don't even want to like deal with his outburst back, you know?
Oh, it's
because they didn't really give any explanation. It was just like, yeah.
No, it's like
no
touching
more
a hot pan. It's
right.
Like touching a hot pan dealing with Yuki. Yeah, so we know that Red Bull, at least, has found a lot of weight saving with the DRS actuator recently and the whole wing setup. So I wonder if AlphaTauri has also done the same thing, and that's why.
So is that why the both of their cars now, the both their teams, AlphaTauri and Red Bull, have been having these recent issues? They're really pushing the envelope with.
Yeah, I mean, that's why Max had the issues in Spain. Right. It's because they found a way to lighten it, save some weight, but obviously it failed.
It's a pretty important part that you're going to lighten it at the expense of it might not work like Max's and it might start breaking like Yuki's.
Right.
That it seems just, like a bad place to try and save a little weight.
It just tells me that it's a substantial weight save then.
Right.
The fact that they're willing to do it.
Yeah. When they look at other things they could slim down.
But
it seems that the DRS is where they're getting a lot of heft out of it.
Yeah, it was interesting. They also told Max to not use DRS for the rest of the race after that happened to Yuki. So I heard
that was interesting too, right? After Yuki's whole thing had sort of snapped a third of the way over on that DRS flap, they immediately were like, Max, don't use DRS.
Yeah, something tells me that there's been some weight-saving techniques shared between Red Bull and AlphaTauri.
Yeah, and those crazy long straights at insane high speeds in Baku, obviously, were a little too much for that slimmed-down DRS.
Yeah. Mood, did you see, this is my last note for practice, in FP2, did you see Lando's 5-point turn in the runoff?
I did not.
It was hilarious.
The runoff was pretty busy.
Oh yeah.
This weekend in the practice, the qualies.
Yeah, so Lando didn't have the scrote to pull the snap turn like you see Seb Vettel do all the time. So he literally did like an Austin Powers 5-point turn. I mean, you could have just put the Benny Hill music right over top of it.
Yeah, there were a lot of impressive snap turns by other drivers, but Lando, and at least at the beginning of the race weekend, wasn't feeling confident enough to do it.
It's not worth the risk if you're not confident in doing it, because I'm waiting for the day where a guy does it and he just puts the rear tire into the wall, broken gearbox, broken axle.
Oh, it's a very tight flip. It's not like they have plenty of room to work with. They're basically, you know, a foot from the wall on each side when they're making that snap turn.
Yeah, the guys who do it are so casual about it. When they go into the runoff, just seeing it visually, you're like, there's no way there's room for a spin.
Yeah, like Vettel has gotten so good at it this
Vettel's
past
incredible
race weekend.
At it.
Yeah. Like he would have just entered it and he's already just keeping his speed and gunning it for the spin turn.
Yeah, his save in the race was ridiculous.
Yeah, and Alonso had a money save in practice 3. He did a little drifting, a little Tokyo drift.
Yeah. It's so easy to get your braking wrong around here and find the barrier. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah. We saw a bunch of guys who they're just pushing it so hard that there's that split second where they either are trying to commit and correct it and they'll likely end up in the wall like Stroll did,
right,
or they just have to bail out and go into that little snap turn, you know.
If they didn't have those runoff areas for the handful of turns that really cause the guy's problems, they couldn't race here. All those 90 degree turns and that off camber, slightly downhill left hander.
It would be a red flag of Palooza.
Yeah, I mean, they just wouldn't be able to race here without that runoff at all.
And the other fun fact, Ryan, I didn't realize, I mean, we know it's tight. Turn 8, right when you're going up towards the castle, is the most narrow, you know, section on the Formula One calendar.
Yeah, I don't think you can get two cars through there.
Yeah, it's 7.6 meters wide.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were talking about it in the pre-race stuff, but I just thought it was interesting because it's so tough because not only is it narrow, but it like pinches in, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
On the opposite side that they're actually going towards when they're making that left turn.
Yeah, and if you've never played like any of the F1 video games, that turn into that castle section is a big commitment. Like it's almost blind.
Yeah.
And you get off the brakes and just turn in. You just go for it.
You have to go so hard because we've seen Kubica. I remember him going too hard to try and cut that first apex and basically hitting the wall going up towards turn 8.
Yeah, and Leclerc
as well.
And then
Leclerc obviously overcooked it and went straight into that Safeco barrier at turn 8. So
yep, that's where we got the famous sound clip of him saying, I am stupid.
Yeah, and again, I think we've joked about it before, but whomever it is that's running the camera in the castle was getting a workout this entire weekend. Where they have them looking down at turn 8 from one of the little portholes or archer holes or whatever turret windows, whatever they're called, and watching a car or two come up through turn 8 and then sprinting over to the next one and looking through to continue watching the action. It's so funny when they get this idea of like, this is going to be such a cool shot. You know, they love sometimes doing the angled shots where it they'll follow the car and then kind of twist it as they go into a turn or something, like with that drone.
Do you think that's like the production meeting? You think that's how it goes down? They like gather all the cameramen together and they just draw names out of a hat. It's like, Timmy, you have Castle Window.
Is that the short straw? Like, I don't want to be running back and forth.
They probably have shade, right?
Yeah, they're in the castle, but I don't know if the air... Well, the air's probably moving. It's actually a surprisingly windy...
It would be nice in there.
...circuit with the Caspian Sea blowing right over it.
They probably got a nice little setup. They got a little nosh behind them in the shade.
Yeah, it's like medieval times, you know?
Yeah.
They have their gruel and their turkey legs.
Yeah. Timmy, you're...
castle.
Timmy, you're on castle window duty this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about in the Grand Preview, I would love that Fenway Park Green Monster style seating in the castle. So what about putting us in there? You know, just let me hang out and peek through those windows the entire race.
I saw like three or four people on top of it a couple times from the helicopter shot.
Yeah, but it has like the grimiest looking plexiglass around like the railing
on
the top of the turret. Yeah. I don't know if it's just not cleaned at all or it looks like you wouldn't get a very good view.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
So we'll have to work on that. Get the Purple Sector section up on the castle for future Baku races.
Purple Sector grandstand on top of a castle.
Yeah. Let's knee him over to Qualies. So it starts off kind of uneventful Q1 until the end. You have Lance Stroll just makes a mess out of the end of Q1.
Oh, the Canadians always deliver when things get boring.
Yeah. I mean, it's not any breaking news that if you predict that Lance Stroll, Nick Latifi, and potentially Mick Schumacher are going to find a wall and red flag a session or multiple sessions on a race weekend. And Stroll starts things off with...
This was all in the same lap, right?
Right. With the minutes winding down and qualifying, he has to slam the brakes and kisses one of the barriers with his front wing, but is able to back out of it and continue. And then, like, right after it, the camera cuts again, and he's completely crushed his front right.
He's destroyed the right side of that car.
Yeah, so then you had a red flag with, like, I think 2.5 minutes left in Q1.
Yep,
so
made it
another mad dash.
Made it a very sweaty finish to Q1. I get frustrated with Bottas because I don't know. I mean, at this point, I'm willing to assume that it is his choice to always go out so late at the end of every quali session.
Yeah, because he had a buzzer beater. But to get into Q2 here.
He always leaves it super late, though. Even when he was at Mercedes, they always left him super late. So it has to be his choice. Anyways.
Yeah, he must like the pressure now. He's Fun Valtteri is performing under the pressure. He was able to sneak into Q2.
But he shouldn't be sneaking into Q2. That's my point. He makes
and he
it
got
so
out-qualified by Joe Guan Yu Zhou.
Yes, which I said at the beginning of the season, anything short of Valtteri beating... Going undefeated against Zhou in qualifying this year would be an embarrassment. Here we are, 8 races in, and it happened.
Yeah, let's just go through real quick. The Q1 and Duns were Magnussen, Alex Albon, Nick Latifi, Lance Stroll, who obviously wrecked out, and Mick Schumacher, who was DFL.
Yeah,
that's fucking last. Never even got like a decent time in.
Right. So Bottas had the buzzer beater. I don't know why he made it so hard on himself. He was sitting in the garage for a while. I don't know if there was something wrong with his car, but... Man, was that poor strategy, in my opinion.
Q2 cuties, Ryan. Both McLaren couldn't get out of Q2. You had Lando Norris and Danny Ricciardo, then Esteban Ocon, then Zhou Guan Yu Zhou, just ahead of his teammate, Valtteri Bottas. So yeah, Valtteri didn't have it on Saturday at all. He had to hit the buzzer beater to get into Q2 and then was slowest of the Q2 runners.
He didn't have it all weekend because he wasn't that impressive in practice, in qualifying. He was a wet blanket. I'm done with trying to predict which weekends, which tracks the Alfa Romeo will be good at. It is so difficult to guess when that car is going to come alive.
Yeah.
I'm over it. Enjoy your cool liveries, but I'm not on your bandwagon anymore.
For the Alfa Romeo, you're saying it doesn't matter what color they go with.
They can
you think they're on the downward trend right now.
Well, yeah, and they have Ferrari power, so there's another liability they have to deal with.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it bit Zhou Guan Yu Zhou in the race for sure, and obviously didn't run well for that team in qualifying when Valtteri has been amazing in qualies this season.
Yes. Disappointing weekend for Alpha.
Yeah.
Joe was points bound, if not for his issues.
Yeah, that would have been, I think, is it still, no, he has points. Lance, no, it's Latifi and Mick Schumacher are the only guys who haven't scored points this season, right?
And Nico Hülkenberg.
That's right. Hülkenberg is still getting paddled. Still not getting any love or respect, I guess.
Nico Hülkenberg is still ahead of Nicholas Latifi in the standings.
Yeah, it is funny. I've noticed that when they'll show the driver standings and scroll to the bottom, and then you see Nico Hülkenberg still in there above, I think above Mick and Latifi, maybe?
I think just Latifi.
And that's based on what average
best
classified
finish.
Position or best finish? Yeah.
Best finish. Hülkenberg finished 12th in Saudi, so I don't think Latifi is going to jump him.
Yeah. So the Q3 sweeties, Ryan, I think, didn't Max make a joke about this after the race or something about the Red Bull sandwich inside of, or it was a Ferrari sandwich with Red Bull in the middle. So the Q3 sweeties, Charles Leclerc on pole, Checo Perez next, Max Verstappen next, Carlos Sainz next,
yeah,
and fourth. So you had that Ferrari cookie sandwiching the Red Bull filling.
Ferrari.
But Checo, again, outperforming, outqualifying Max.
Yeah, Checo's coming alive here. It's a question still about, you know, could he beat Max over a season distance on race pace? I don't think so, but he's certainly showing some chops on Saturday versus Max.
Yeah, he's come alive. It's fun to watch now, right? Because it was so frustrating when Max was having Gasly and Albon, who were they would struggle to get near him in qualifying, and then Max was just on an island fighting any number of
right.
different cars, you know. It is nice to see Checo figuring the car out and actually bringing the fight to Max, out qualifying him, not able to put it all together on Sundays, but
yeah. What's interesting, you know, Las Vegas and the sportsbooks are taking notice because heading into quali this weekend, Checo was 14-1 to win the driver's championship, and after the race he got slashed to 7-1.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everyone's talking about on Sky, they're loving talking about a three-horse race, you know, with
yeah.
Perez, Leclerc, and Max. Leclerc's still being talked about in the Drivers' Championship, but Ferrari better figure something out if they want to keep doing that.
He deserves to be because his driving is that of someone who could win a title. His fucking team is the issue.
Yeah. And
he's driving like a fucking demon on Saturdays, dude. I mean, he's untouchable.
Oh, it's unbelievable. The laps he's putting up to get first, and then he's shredding those laps, and they're often not even counting at the end of Q3, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
It's unbelievable the times he's putting in on a one-lap run in qualifying this season.
He was untouchable on that lap that he put in. Just untouchable.
Yeah, but the new stat, Ryan, is that basically they have like an inverse of how many poles Charles has versus how many wins he has. I think it's now like maybe 6 poles and 2 wins, whereas Max has like 2 poles and 6 wins or something. So Max is getting the points where you can actually get the points. And I think now the other fun fact is that Max has more wins from Charles Leclerc starting on pole, races where Charles starts on pole, than Charles has wins from starting
yes.
on pole.
Yes.
It's crazy.
It's, yeah. Not enough people are talking about it, but Charles Leclerc is slowly but surely building one of the worst pole-to-win ratios ever. I mean, he has 15 pole positions now and 4 wins. Those 4 wins came from those poles, but that's it. 15 poles, 4 wins. That's dreadful.
Yes.
If anything, it speaks to his prowess on Saturdays, obviously, but
that doesn't win you championships.
Right. I'm just, you know, the other issue is that he drives for Ferrari. So, like, I can't put it all on him. He's not converting these poles because his race craft sucks.
Yeah. It's a number of different issues.
Mostly
some
Ferrari.
Some strategy, some indecision on his part, and poor strategy, right? Because we've talked about it. I love the way Sainz operates when he's actually able to race in Grand Prix at Ferrari, because he tends to have issues pop up. And yes, he's forced to retire. But when he is out there, he's thinking about strategy. He's dictating strategy, right?
Yes, he certainly seems bigger brain over a race distance than
I think Charles
Leclerc. But
right. Charles might have too much misplaced faith in Ferrari's strategy team.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Because he said that in like interviews and talking back to Monaco and stuff where he's saying, yeah, you know, they see more than me, so I'm just listening to what they're saying. But then they boned him hard, you know?
Right. Well, that is a characteristic of the greats.
Right.
Lewis, Michael Schumacher, those guys.
Yeah, Senna was big on that.
Those guys are disagreeable over the radio.
Right.
Like, you see it all the time.
And I think that's going to be probably during the course of this season, I think we will see Leclerc become more of a strategist on the track. Because if Ferrari keeps doing this kind of stuff to him.
Yeah, but I think it'll be to his detriment. To me, it'll just signal a loss of trust.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely not. It depends how you go about doing it, you know? Like, Sainz is basically just saying, here's what I'm feeling, here's what I want, tire-wise, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what they did to Charles in Monaco is just unforgivable.
Yeah. So let's go to the pre-race stuff, Ragai. Did you hear the Azerbaijan anthem?
Yeah, it was fucking intense. I liked it. So it was very intense.
The thing I took away from it is, I mean, I'm sure there are other anthems that do this, but half the lyrics are just Azerbaijan, Azerbaijan. Like, it starts off where they're just singing Azerbaijan over and over, and then it closes out with, again, just Azerbaijan over and over.
Yeah, it's a hype song.
Yeah.
You're getting hyped.
Yeah. And in the little grid walk.
It was also long, too, wasn't it? It felt like it went on for 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's long. It's a long anthem.
Don't they have the abridged version? Every country does the abridged version.
Right, the single version, you know, the radio version.
The radio.
For that airplay.
The radio edit.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it was Karun who did like a little baby grid walk because Martin wasn't there.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a good Grand Prix weekend for a grid walk.
Right.
How many celebrities are on the grid in Baku?
Yeah, but I just liked when he had a quick chat with Perez, and Perez crystallized what the plan was for Red Bull, and it came to fruition. He said, yeah, we just need to get both our cars in front of the red car.
Yeah.
So exactly what they did.
Did you see the promoting that the official Instagram account for the Baku Street Circuit was putting out for the race weekend?
No. Excuse me, no, but they love pushing the Street Fighters angle.
Yeah, so they had a bunch of musical acts that no one's ever heard of. I got a kick out of it. I'll have to dig it up, but it was funny because when you juxtapose it with like Miami, where it's like we have Kygo and you know all these other names, Baku was like we have, and it's just like some you know Azerbaijani name that no one can pronounce.
Yeah,
it was funny. I'll have to dig.
We have a player piano that is going to just you know play classical tunes for the listeners.
Right.
You ready to grid up for the race here?
Yeah, I'm going to try and find this for you though. It's funny, but just keep going.
Fifty-one laps around the Baku City Circuit, Ragai.
Oh yeah,
it's a fun track. It's fun, very fun visually. It's got a little bit of everything, you know, old buildings, castles, crazy, huge, like office buildings and government buildings.
It's a very photogenic city, at least from the air.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely looks. It definitely plays well on TV and with those shots from inside the castle, as we mentioned with that guy. So. Race starts, Ryan.
Well, hang on. Yeah. I did notice something. The first year the first couple years they went here, we got a lot of shots of the sea. Now,
yes.
when you, looking out at the sea.
Because didn't they have?
There's oil drills everywhere.
Oh, that's the bit now.
So I noticed now they don't cut to the sea at all anymore.
Oh, like, yeah, you wouldn't even know it's on the Caspian Sea anymore.
They just show just the shore. But yeah. If they showed a long shot out, it's like oil well after oil well after oil well.
Oh yeah, they know what they're doing.
So they wised up. They were like, let's not highlight that anymore.
Yeah, because I remember they always used to show that shot of the sea where they had that big fountain kind of thrown out into the middle of the sea, right?
Yes.
Yeah, but
they wised up.
Now the fountains are just pulling up crude.
Yeah, I mean, everyone knows.
Yeah.
Everyone knows what's going on there.
Yes. Let's not be naive, peeps. But either way, it still looks great. I think it plays great on television.
Do you think that's actually a fun... Like, do you think Baku would be a fun city to go spend 2-3 nights in?
If the race is there that weekend, I would say so, but I don't know about it. Well, it depends, actually. I need to hear who these artists are that they were trotting out there. But
I can't find it right now, so.
I'm sure you could find fun there. I mean, if I imagine that any capital city in any country, you're going to have a good time if you visit for a couple days.
That's fair.
You know?
That is fair.
Let's not act like there's not anything fun in Baku somehow, you know, just because they've got oil derricks or whatever out there.
Yeah.
So Perez, Ryan, great start from Checo. He learned from when Hamilton almost jumped him with the for the magic button.
Well,
at
great,
Baku last
race. It was 50-50 in my opinion. Great start from Perez, but also like a taste of brake magic by Charles. It was almost brake magic all over again. He barely made that turn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was definitely swung out wide on it. And by lap 10, Ryan, as we've said, the bad luck lightning struck Carlos Sainz. Already on lap 10, he went out with what? It was a hydraulic failure. Who knows? Because when they initially just tell you what it is, who knows?
Oh, it was. So if you watch F1 TV, Sam Collins is the guy who does all the tech stuff. And he was actually like on the ground and he went right up behind it because Ferrari had already put the red blanket over Carlos's car. And you could just see the hydraulic fluid leaking out the back. And Sam pointed it out. He was like, that's not a good sign. Gotcha. If you ever see hydraulic fluid coming out of the back, game over.
Yeah. And then you had Leclerc's engine on lap 20. So 10 laps in, Sainz is out. 20 laps in, Leclerc's engine, pew, blown, spewing.
Yeah.
Oil and liquids and everything all over the place.
And then from there, it just became endemic of anyone who had Ferrari power. Guanyu Zhou.
Joe, four laps later, retired. Magnussen retires. Lap 33. So, yeah, within, you know, 10th lap, 20th lap, 24th lap, 33rd lap, you had four Ferrari power units go down.
So here's the thing, okay? Do you remember earlier in the season when Mattia Binotto was saying, hey, just remember, we still have power in hand. We're not turning the engines up yet. We want to go through the first five races before we start turning them up to make sure we have reliability. Okay? So, what race do you think Spain was?
What number on the calendar?
Yes.
Race four?
Six.
Yeah.
What happened to Leclerc on the sixth race of the season?
I can't even remember.
His engine blew in Spain.
Okay. So they're pushing them too hard. They're cranking them, huh?
Mattia literally said, we're going to wait to turn up the engines through the first five races of the year to make sure
we
have fidelity of reliability.
So now he thinks they can start cranking these Ferrari power units and engines are blowing left and right.
So clearly they began pushing them and it is not working. And apparently it's a mileage issue too. The instant they get into higher mileage mode, they're popping.
Gotcha.
So Ferrari,
they don't have the longevity in that power unit.
Yeah, so Ferrari is in quite the pickle here, them and their customers. I mean, literally, the instant they've turned these things up, they're popping left and right. Twice now for Leclerc, Magnussen. I mean, did it happen to any other customers, other weekends? I don't remember.
This is the first I feel we've seen those real engines blow. We've seen some fires and other things. Remember, Bottas had, I think, some engine stuff going on in... Maybe that was in Spain or somewhere.
I don't think there were any issues in Monaco, though, because like Monaco doesn't stress engines at all.
No, they're just on cruise control. Just make sure you slow down enough to make the casino hairpin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch because the beginning of the season, this is what we always say. And I feel like we're broken records with this. The tale of however many seasons, because Ferrari looked unbeatable. Red Bull looked like they were, you know, in shambles with regard to reliability, red liability. Yeah. And then now you have Ferrari, signs of struggle all season with reliability and finishing races. But now you have Ferrari power units up and down the grid having issues. And Red Bull obviously has their little DRS wing that keeps having a problem, but nothing major in those squads compared to what Ferrari's having.
Yeah. I mean,
and then Mercedes just has crazy porpoising and they're trying to break their drivers' backs.
Yeah, Mercedes is still old reliable though. Like there hasn't been an inkling of reliability issues yet for them.
For how tough physically it looks like that car is to drive, it's insane how they're performing.
They just
still
gotta be
this
there.
Season, right?
The formula is there. They just have to be there if the car development comes their way even a little bit, you know, look at the constructor standings right now. They could easily catch Ferrari.
Right. Well, I think you put this note in here too, right? That over the last five races, Mercedes has outscored Ferrari 96-95. So over five races, which isn't small,
Mercedes
has more constructors points.
Yeah, I mean,
and meanwhile, this car is like snapping their spine, compressing their discs, and looks like a beast to drive. At times, all the guys on Sky are always commenting on how loose the Merc looks in turns and corners, and you know what I mean, and how bad it's porpoising.
Toto is an incredible businessman. Why isn't he capitalizing on this sponsorship opportunity for like a Sleep Number bed or a Casper mattress for Lewis and George with their backaches?
Yeah, or having the Miami Dolphins brand the car with like the jumping dolphin logo, the porpoise logo,
exactly,
going up the sides of the car.
If I was Toto, I'd be ringing those mattress companies off the hook. I'd be ringing. What's that company that makes the vibrating thing that's supposed to massage you? It's like a gun.
Oh, there's a million of those. Yeah, the
Theragun or what? Something like that.
Hyper Ice or something, and Theragun, and yeah, there's a million of those. Sharper Image has their own. Kidding me? Sharper Image has everything, babe.
That would be so funny if, like, a week from now, Hamilton's cutting ads where he's like, the Mercedes puts a beating on your back this year, but thank God I have a Casper mattress.
Yeah, but, I mean, as we've said, don't be fooled by how much Mercedes gets talked about in a sort of critical light on all these broadcasts, because they're still struggling to figure out, you know, the suspension and the porpoising and their overall design strategy compared to most of the other teams that are quicker. Because, as we mentioned, they've outscored Ferrari in the last five races. They're getting podiums or fighting for podiums every weekend. They have a 3-4 here with a double DNF for Ferrari, you know?
Yeah, they just have to be there and keep unlocking performance. Now, it is quite a gap they have to make. Like, it's basically 0.8 to a second, depending on the track. But it's Mercedes. Like, find me another team with as many resources.
Yeah, and we always have commented how all the Mercedes, when Toto has been there, are tanks where they can,
yes,
they just take a pounding either from other cars or from barriers or from porpoising or bumps, and they just never seem to have issues. Even if
they really don't.
Even if pieces like break off or get damaged, it doesn't seem to affect performance that much.
Yeah. I mean, even in Monaco, you had fucking Esteban Ocon run into, basically close the door on Hamilton twice and ran into him twice.
Yeah, and remember when Magnussen went into Hamilton earlier this season too?
Yeah.
And Hamilton had some floor damage, I think, and maybe side pod damage, and was still able to rip and roar.
He came back to finish, what, P5?
Right.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with Mercedes. They're fascinating year they're having. Just, I hope they figure out the porpoising
so we can stop talking about it as much. Well, every session and broadcast, there's so much focus on.
Well, if you were waiting for the first thing to happen this year where it would truly get ugly between team principals and teams, this is it. Over the porpoising, and Toto calling for the regulations to change.
Yeah,
which unless I'm wrong, would have to take a full vote, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure the percent. I think it's a crazy majority or a full.
I think all the teams would have to agree.
Vote. Yeah.
Or a big. Yeah, exactly. I just don't think it's going to happen. I don't think anyone's going to do them favors.
So the other team, Ryan, that actually was one of the more entertaining circuses during this race was McLaren. Just because of all these sorts of team orders and so much action on the radio, and then drivers getting snarky and holding position and telling each other to push or asking to get around. And
yeah,
it was like a serious soap opera going on over the radio.
Absolutely. I saw a lot of people with negative things to say about how Lando was handling the end of the race, but I'm sorry. I think that the blame lies with McLaren. They couldn't have made that race more convoluted for both those drivers.
Right. They set it up for that issue to arise when earlier in the race, they're like, yeah, he's quicker, let him by. And then later, when Danny Ric's in front of Lando but stuck behind Alonso, who the Alpines, by the way, just have a rocket. They were the fastest.
So fast.
Oh, on tracks like this, if Alonso just plays games, right? Like, he loves just backing the guys up and then just rocketing down the straights where Danny Rick was like, even if I had DRS on Alonso, it wouldn't have mattered. I'm not catching him in these straights in that car.
That seems to be the only trick that Alpine has up their sleeve both these years now, last year and this year, is low drag, straight line speed, power tracks. That's really where they prosper.
Right. And so early in the race, I think it was that, oh, Danny, you're on a different strategy, and Lando's quicker right now, so this isn't your fight. Let him by, right?
It was the other way around. Danny was behind him on the hard and was like, I could go faster than him, and I'm on the hard.
I thought it was the, because then later they were saying, well, this is, you know, Danny let you by earlier, and so that's why you have to stay behind
was it?
Him
I
now.
Have to go back and yeah. look, but either way. But
either way, at the end of the race was where it was intriguing because there's, I think, like a half dozen laps, six, five laps left.
Yeah, Lando wanted
and
to
Lando's
pass
really closing in on Danny Rick, who can't close in on Fernando Alonso because of that rocket down the straights that the Alpine is.
Right.
And Lando's saying, like, tell him to pick it up. Or, like, am I able to fight him or pass him or,
right,
you know, come up. What are we doing here, basically? Like, yeah. I'm starting to gain on him, so tell him to either push it or not. And then it was, like, weird because I think there were, like, four laps left, and the team is saying, okay, would you be happy if we let you by to take a run at Alonso, but if you don't get it, then you have to relinquish the spot back to Ricardo at the end of the race?
Yeah,
it's he's like, yeah, I'd be happy with that, I guess.
You know what it sounded? You know what that sounded like? It sounded like Michael Masi in Saudi last year, where he's like,
right. But then they didn't even do the swap and have him make a run because I think they probably realized, just get home, guys. You're gonna screw this up if we actually let you start doing something.
What did you make of when Lando was saying?
Yeah, I was sort of agreeing. I assume you're gonna say this is different. Now we're racing for position, not strategy.
Well, so the race engineer is saying it's quid pro quo. He scratched your back earlier. Now you need to scratch his back.
He was saying that, but Lando's argument was, yeah, because we're running different strategies or running at different paces at that time. But now this is a handful of laps left. But I agree with Lando, but I disagree.
Right. It's not that simple.
Because we've seen that in the past where the team has to protect the driver's egos and their beef and that they don't do something stupid, right? Because
right,
what about when if they say, yeah, Lando, get a run at Alonso, and then he starts pulling away and goes, guys, I can't slow down this much to let Danny Rick pass me now, and he just takes the position from Danny. Now you have a shitload of bad blood where Danny Rick is already getting attacked every which way in the media, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, I look at it this way. Lando is saying, yeah, that was previously for race strategy, but here we're actually racing. But Daniel's ahead because of the strategy at that point, and the team is asking you to hold station.
Right.
So it's not racing.
When your teammates, it's not. I agree. I think I could see his point. I think it was a
but when he brings up strategy
point to make right to try and make them think about it and be like, yeah, you're right. Go ahead.
Yeah, but
I'm with you. Strategy.
Saying,
it's always strategy.
Yeah. Well, he said, yeah, that was because of strategy earlier. Yeah, and the strategy worked. Daniel's ahead of you.
Right, and the strategy also is bringing both our cars home in one piece. Versus you guys fighting and wrecking or ruining the morale within the team by, you know, screwing Danny or Danny screwing you.
Do you want to know what I really think about that situation?
What?
I think Lando just wants to continually keep putting his throat on Daniel mentally and just keep destroying him mentally.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. He's playing serious mind games.
Because even though Lando didn't catch Daniel in the end,
oh, I love
all that,
that
shit
move.
Was still put on radio, and you know Daniel will hear it eventually.
Yeah, and I know you saw on the final lap when Lando had DRS behind Danny Rick going toward the line, and he was flying and then went down the inside and crept all the way up right into his peripheral, basically, and then you saw him back off.
Oh, like, I think
hey,
Lando
look,
was actually going for it.
I was
going
to take this.
I think he ran out of road.
I don't think he was going to steal it. I think he was kind of making a statement, getting some frustration.
I don't know. I think he would have done it.
So your podium, Rye Guy, Max Verstappen wins the race. Checo Perez second. Red Bull 1-2. And George Russell, third step on this podium.
Yeah, can you allow me to go backwards here for a second?
Of course.
So do you remember when Magnussen retired and he pulled off to the left of that sharp left-hander.
When the car starts rolling and he has to like stop it.
When he's like, hey, and he's marshals.
Begging to the marshals to come out. Yeah.
He's literally holding the car up from rolling because it's in neutral. And he's like, get the fuck over here.
Yeah.
It was an interesting weekend for the marshals.
Yeah. And he put on a platter for him. He pulled right into that open side barrier with his car.
Did you see those videos of the marshals dancing in between sessions?
Missed that. Wish I had seen that.
It was like 50 marshals in a circle, and they were doing like traditional Azerbaijani dances. Just think like the Russian dances where they're like, with their legs.
Yeah.
That was exactly what they were doing. It was lit. I loved it.
All I can think of is those Ferrari mechanic ballet from Drive to Survive. Was that last season, the Ferrari anniversary? That was 2020.
No, that was, it was a while ago.
That was so great. That anniversary celebration with the ballet from the Ferrari mechanics. Unbelievable stuff.
That might have been 2019.
It may have been. I thought it was 2020. I thought it was because it was when they went in that COVID season to...
Oh, okay.
Which track was it where they had like...
Mugello.
Mugello. Exactly. But let's get back to present day. Checo Perez gets the purple point and second place. So he snares a point here from Max. And it was by like 4 thousandths of a second compared to
tight.
Max's quickest, I think.
It was tight.
So yeah, Checo's still flying. And I mean, huge weekend for Max and for Red Bull.
Yeah, not so huge for Ferrari. If I had to describe...
Hugely disappointing for Ferrari.
If I had to describe Ferrari's season thus far, or basically their campaign this season, I would describe it as al dente. It's undercooked. It's all just undercooked.
It's extra dente.
No.
Because I think a lot of people like al dente.
Well, some people don't.
Yeah.
It's undercooked. It's not the final product yet. They had a great start, but there are some serious warts to that factory right now.
It's a macaroni picture right now. They need to start boiling the macaroni and make a nice sauce to put on it.
I mean, it's just whatever they're doing is not working. They gotta keep cooking.
So I think Toto, as we mentioned when he's saying, look at what the FIA is doing to Hamilton with the back and with, you know, how bad their car's bouncing. He's sort of like losing, I don't know if he's losing his edge or this is him politicking, but the fact that he says this, he calls the car a shitbox after the race.
Lewis, we all know that this is a bit of a shitbox to drive at the moment. And sorry for the back also. We will sort ourselves out.
Because he's always been, you know, oh, everyone works so hard back at the factory, and we let everyone take chances for... He had to walk this back now after the race and basically say, like, I still support our development team and our designers. And,
yeah,
you know,
he's out there
saying that thing's a shitbox to drive, Lewis.
I'm with you. When I heard that radio broadcasted live, I was like, holy shit. I mean, what do you think Mercedes corporate thinks about that? What do you think Mercedes corporate in Stuttgart thinks about him calling it a shitbox?
Yeah, and the fact that, as we've said, every race weekend is the broadcast teams commenting on how awful the car looks to drive, how bad it is through all the corners, right? That's not good stuff for Mercedes corporate.
He had to have gotten a phone call because it's like, Toto, we just podiumed. The Ferraris are blowing up. Why are you calling us a shitbox over the radio?
Yeah, yeah. Toto is,
I mean, that must have just
aggressive
been
with it.
Pure emotion.
Oh, I think he's fired up.
This
sure.
is a bit of a shitbox.
But it's just very out of character for him. Very out of character.
It is, and he had to walk it back, and I think he will have to be smarter, and I don't necessarily know that saying look at what the FIA is doing to our car is the right way to go. Calling his car a shitbox and saying the FIA needs to fix it.
Yeah, let me clarify what I just said. It's out of character for Toto in the sense that he's willing to denigrate his own team. It's not out of character for him to like lash out on the radio like that. We saw that last year when he says, fuck them all. And all that. He can get emotional.
No, Michael. Yeah.
But for him to say that about his own team and the car is, it's pretty bonkers.
Yeah. Raga, you want to flash back now and see how our bold predictions did?
Yes.
We've missed you with these bold predictions. I like that.
There's going to be a minimum of 2 red flags in qualifying. Charles Leclerc will get pole position. George Russell's top five streak will end.
That's bold. I love it.
Zhou Guanyu Zhou will score points. Valtteri Bottas will finish in the top five. There will be a double points finish for both Alpine drivers. Max Verstappen will be victorious on Sunday.
We will have a winner outside of Red Bull and Ferrari. Mick Schumacher does not wreck his Haas car this weekend.
At all?
Yeah, he will not damage his Haas car.
So, Moot, you fucking landed, in my opinion. First of all, both of your predictions were the boldest so far this season because we've only had Red Bull and Ferrari winners. You try to go
only
against
three
that.
Race winners this season, yeah.
So you try to go against that, and you also stuck your neck out with the Mick no damage. All weekend, no damage.
Yeah.
And he did it. I can't believe you nailed that.
That one is crazy. I feel like, remember when Danny Ric was at Renault and he had the tattoo bet?
Yeah.
With a beatable if he got a podium. And I think it was my bold prediction, like every time, was I trying to wish it into existence.
Yeah, you were rooting for the tattoo.
Danny Ric is getting a podium this weekend. Danny Ric, over and over until it finally happened. I feel like you're almost in the position now. You're going to have to do that George Russell to be outside the top five every race because until you get it right.
I've done it twice.
You've hit it a couple times, yeah.
I've done it twice, but I haven't done it back-to-back.
But that is now, I mean, it is impressively
amazing. It is a massive trend I'm betting against.
Yeah, that he, in the car, in that shit box of a car.
This is a bit of a shit box.
That he is top five in every race this season. It's crazy impressive.
It is. And he's doing all the things correctly. He's just being there. He's out-qualifying his teammate most of the time, and he's just being there for when shit goes wrong for the guys ahead of him.
True, true. We have to talk about this trophy, Rye Guy. What were your thoughts? I actually like the pattern. I kind of like the design from afar, but it's kind of weird because it looks like it's slit down the side, like almost folded in, like if you folded a magazine or a newspaper, you know?
Right.
But the pattern was nice. It looked decent in general. I just need to confirm, does that slit go all the way down so it can absolutely not be filled? I think it does.
It does. I thought it was a decent trophy. Not crazy about it, but I will give props to Baku. I think they've changed their trophy every year.
I think they try new things every season. I agree. And not just a slight change. They go crazy in every different direction every season.
The rest of the calendar needs to take notes from Baku. They are proving to be a role model for all other Grand Prix. The racing's always interesting. They change the trophy every year. There's a lot to like.
Yeah, I agree. And I liked the other thing I look for in the trophies, as we've discussed, is how much of a size difference there is from the first place trophy to third place. And first place was a pretty decent size, like a big vase or something. The third place one that George Russell got looked like a little rolled up magazine. It was very tiny, much smaller. So I always find that comical when it's a miniature ass third place trophy.
Moot, I think we skipped over this. Did you talk about the Mortal Kombat intro, the Street Fighter intro for Sky Sports?
Well, that's the thing. I think Sky, they were playing this in that Grand Prix Sunday when they're doing the pre-race buildup.
Yeah.
And I think they were trying to play off the Street Fighter thing, but it was Mortal Kombat themed.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I saw it too, but I didn't make the connection. I thought it was Street Fighter. I mean, obviously that's what
it was
going.
Mortal Kombat looking, not that's Street funny. Fighter to me, but it was...
They should have thrown some fatalities in there.
Yeah, they should have. I mean, it was funny who they were saying was the one who got beaten up in some of these past incidents, like... You had the brake checking incident where Vettel slammed into Lewis and
then rammed him.
And you had the two Red Bulls where Max and Danny Ric came together and took each other out in turn one. So they were basically using those incidents and then doing this ridiculous Mortal Kombat Street Fighter style graphical fight for it.
I liked it. It was entertaining.
Yeah. They bring the entertainment for sure in that pre-race stuff. I always like watching it.
So,
any other housekeeping for you? I've got everything buttoned up here on this Baku Grand Prix that I enjoyed very much.
Yeah, so as you mentioned earlier, Mercedes has outscored Ferrari over the last five races, now 96-95. Unbelievable. We're looking at the constructors here. Ferrari is only 38 points, if my math is correct, 38 points ahead of Mercedes now. I mean, we could literally see that turn soon, maybe even in Canada.
You're saying that Mercedes jumps Ferrari.
If Ferrari has another DNF,
they're going to be sweating hard for sure.
And the worst thing for Ferrari is there's so little time in between Baku and Canada, especially with all the traveling that they have to do, that they're not going to be able to analyze or remedy anything with the power unit.
Yeah.
They're
going to be sweaty palms for Mattia Binotto.
Exactly.
His curls are going to flatten out with how much he's going to sweat through them.
I mean, they're going to stick a new engine in Charles's car, most likely. It might be new everything. And if that's the case, he probably doesn't have to worry because, as we said before, it's when the engines get to higher mileage that they're failing for Ferrari. So he should be good in Canada. But that doesn't mean that Carlos will be good.
Stoked for Canada, and that's this weekend, right? No break. Yeah.
Yes. Just a casual back-to-back race weekend for F1. You go from Baku to Montreal.
Yeah.
Do you know how hellacious that itinerary is?
Basically neighbors on the map, on the globe, right?
That's like one-third of the globe,
exactly.
I think.
Exactly. It's crazy. It's nuts.
Very crazy.
This jammed-up calendar is just insane, where you have all these guaranteed spots on all these different corners of the globe, and they don't really have any more of that flow that makes sense, right? Where you kind of make your way through Europe and then make your way through North America and South America, then you hit the Middle East. They're just going Middle East, back to America, back to Europe, back to the Middle East, back to North America.
Well, the hot rumor this week is that Kyalami in South Africa is going to be added to the calendar next year. That's also not a fun destination to get to, South Africa. That's far south.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a long flight.
They might have to just go by ship.
Maybe.
Go around the Cape, you know?
But anyway, something to keep your eye
on. Around the horn.
All right, quick breakdown of the Drivers' Championship now. Verstappen is on 150 points. Perez is on 129, 21 points behind him. Leclerc is 13 points behind Perez. So Leclerc now in third place. How long before George Russell catches them?
I mean, Georgie boy doesn't finish outside the top five, so another double DNF. As you said, if there's a Ferrari double DNF, you know, the car is not going to be the only thing that's red. It'll be everybody's face, everybody's eyes, maybe the factory red with flames if the locals in Maranello get pissed enough, you know, that they're not finishing any races.
If you're Ferrari, if you're Mattia Helmut, you know, and you have your debrief, everyone's in the room with the headsets on, they're all looking at the same data, everyone's in there chopping up everything that happened in Baku. They're going to get all the negatives out of the way. Mattia's going to be like, so, not a good weekend. Charles's engine blew up. Carlos had hydraulic failure. What is he selling that room for upsides to be energetic for moving forward? Like, what are the good things on the horizon?
Yeah, I mean, it's pole positions and the beginning of the season. And hey, we're the Ferrari.
Yeah. Forza Ferrari.
Yeah, Forza Ferrari. Essere Ferrari.
Do you think that's how he opened the debrief? He's like,
Forza Ferrari.
He's like, first, I just want to say, another pole position for Charles. That is nice.
Right. Like, he goes to the wall and puts another red star for pole position on Charles Leclerc's employee of the week picture.
It's raining shit on the Scuderia right now.
Yes, it is. But it's time to button up Baku, Rye Guy. I enjoyed it. We always do. And
Like you said,
pack your bags. We're heading straight to Montreal.
Yeah. Great, dude, we haven't been in Montreal since I went to the race in 2019.
Yeah, that is the crazy thing. Not since Vettel was at Ferrari. Leclerc was a rookie at Ferrari, his first year at Ferrari.
Yeah.
So get ready for Montreal. Poutine and Pirelli. See you on the track.
Three purple sectors.
Yeah, the car is terrible to drive. Very difficult.
I want to change things. I want to stop Mercedes dominating.
Honestly, what are we doing? Racing or pink block?
Okay, Lewis, close that gap as much as you can. It's hammer time.
It's not getting the full flags.
How did you call that last lap incident? Brainless.
Daniel, a hard-fought fourth place in the end for you.
Hard-fought? Not really. I thought that was boring.
So I think we can call Max Verstappen the baby-faced assassin.
I think we clench our butt cheeks and hope we stay there to the end, Martin.
I'm driving like a grandma.
What the f***?
Looks like my wife's driving that car.
Yeah, tell the safety car to slow down.
He's stroking that Ferrari.
I know I'm losing time to Vettel, but I really don't care.
They are racing.
So it's happy hour, basically.
People just simply don't have the balls to stick to what they say.
Mamma mia, what the hell is going on?
A firm boundary position, stay as they are. We'll talk about it after the race.
We are here to race and not to just hang out, so...